With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Be a drag, just be a queen. Whether you're broke or evergreen, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. Jim Campbell's here.
Hello.
Pete Donaldson's here.
Good evening, afternoon.
And guess who's back again? It's Luke Aaron Moore.
I was born this way.
Everybody, welcome. Come on in. Put your feet up. It's the Football Ramble. It's lovely to have you all with us.
Then take your feet down.
Yeah, don't keep
You're not
up.
At home now.
You're not on public transport now. They don't like that.
They probably will either be at home or on public transport.
Yeah.
You two are a shocker there.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to be the most likely candidates, I would think.
Get your feet down.
Could be in the office, could be on a building site.
People have to sit there.
Right then, gentlemen, we've recently had Super Bowl 51.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What a comeback from the New England Patriots. Once again, you're welcome, World of Sport.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Spoilers!
Yeah. Biggest sport in the world.
Says the guy who actually spoilers TV shows all the time. Do you not know what they are?
And the guy who's got a daily radio show. Isn't
Yeah, Clark spoilers. Kent is Superman.
Queen Anne's dead. Come on!
Why's everyone shouting at me?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, if you could bring something from the NFL into the football leagues of Great Britain and beyond, if you could incorporate something from that NFL culture, or even some rule or something like that.
They do sport right, don't they? It's jazzier than us.
It's certainly jazzier. I will say that.
A lot more advertising real estate, let's say.
Yeah. Jim, what would you do?
Well, like, a lot of people are sort of very resistant of the idea of kind of Americanising football in any sense, aren't they? Like, people get angry about there being like a warm-up show for the FA Cup final and stuff like that. So I would sort of steer away from that and kind of have something that I genuinely think is brilliant that they have, which is the All-Star Game.
Oh,
yeah. Imagine, at the end of the season...
That's a great shout.
Just the best players in the league. I don't know how you'd pick it. I don't know whether you'd have, like, a team of people doing it or you'd use some sort of, like, stats-based thing, but just the 20... You know, the best players in the league just playing a match
in
the
NFL.
They do, yeah.
I don't think...
They have it in MLS.
It's very much a sort of showpiece thing.
They do it, but they don't take it very seriously. Yeah. It's normally in Hawaii, but I think it was in Florida.
Yeah, we did.
I'll probably get that wrong. I get NFL stuff wrong all the time.
There was a couple of All-Star games. They used to have them back in the day when it was, like, England versus Europe or the rest of the world 11 or something like that. And then I can remember, I think it was ahead of the 98 World Cup, they had a Europe 11 versus rest of the world 11. The rest of the world pumped them because they were taking it seriously. And they had Batistuta and Ronaldo up front, who were not going easy. You're absolutely loving that. So, it would be an interesting one, Jim. The best.
I think that's a good shout. I like that. I think that's a lovely shout.
That alone, Batistuta and Ronaldo are in the same team there. That's down my spine. Oh.
Spines?
Are you thinking...
All my spines.
Are you thinking Diego Costa and Olivier Giroud in the same team?
Just so you know, it's very unlikely Batistuta or Ronaldo we pick these days.
Yeah. Well, another prominent Argentinian is coming out of retirement. We'll touch on that later.
Nice.
Luke, what would you go for?
I mulled over a number of different things, actually, and I settled on...
Moldovans are involved, aren't they?
I settled on the entire country of Moldova. I thought about one or two different things, and I settled on something that looks very cool, but you never see in football at all, other than the great Rüştü Rekba, which is eye black.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Eye black, you see.
So the Turkish keeper.
Yeah.
What is that for?
Well, I'm going to tell you, Pete. Okay. Did you ask that question?
Good.
We did prep that in advance.
All right. Yeah. What are you for?
I'll answer that one.
How long have you got? I heard Thursday show. No, I was gonna, essentially, to explain what it's for, it's a bit of a myth that has now been busted. It's for the glare of the floodlights in the sun. Apparently... People used to originally wear it because they think the glare of the sun or the floodlights would dazzle them, and so the eye black stops the reflection.
Right.
But it's not actually that effective at doing that. Apparently, it's very good at making you much more able to distinguish between light and dark colours. So when you've got a moving ball or.
Oh, hello.
I was so enthusiastic. I just punched my microphone around.
Yeah.
When you've got a moving ball, it's much easier for you to track the movement of the ball over, say, the sun or a bright sky. So it would genuinely probably be very, very useful for goalkeepers. So eye black would improve goalkeeping in this league 100%. And based on what I saw last weekend, they bloody well need it.
So putting a dark matter on underneath your eyes helps... Distinguish. How does that work? That's insane.
It helps distinguish between light and dark in fast-moving environments. So, listen, give Mignolet it. It's problem solved. Give Hennessy it. Problem solved.
Could you wear like tinted contact lenses if you were a goalkeeper and you wanted to kind of like effectively wear sunglasses?
Not sure, but I do know that in the NFL they banned people putting messages on the eye black.
Right.
Because there's a guy called Tim Tebow who used to put like Bible messages, things on there. And there was people trying to do like commercial messaging on there, but that was banned.
Right.
But Tom Brady.
Nicholas Bentley had a Paddy Power.
Turning your face into an advert.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So Tom Brady famously was wearing the eye black last night, as we saw. So that's what I would introduce.
Could start a trend of general face paint, couldn't it?
It could do.
Kiss. Got somebody gone full kiss.
Yeah, there was an Argentinian player in the lower leagues who used to do that. He died not that long ago.
Oh, that's right.
He was a journeyman in the lower leagues, and he used to make up his face like kiss.
Yeah,
that's
right. He did it
a while ago.
Yeah, he did it in training, didn't he? He did it in training and also in pre-game as well.
I think he actually did it in games too.
I think I read the same piece. It was in The Guardian, wasn't it, a few weeks ago?
It, yeah. was, it was a piece
Check
of
it out,
Guardian,
though.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Let's just say he did it in-game.
Yeah.
Peter, is it your go?
I don't care.
Yeah, go
I'll have a crack.
Yeah, go on.
Well, the coolest thing I've ever seen in an NFL football match was when Bane in The Dark Knight comes on the field.
Yeah.
And he's got, like, one of those masks, hasn't he?
He does. Yeah.
It's not a dog like this.
Yeah. This is when the American football field, like, just sort of disappears.
Yeah, exactly.
Him.
Yeah, he ruined the game.
Yeah. Yeah,
don't bring him in.
Not worried about that spoiler, is he? Yeah.
What?
No, that's not really a spoiler.
That's fine.
That's on the trailer as well.
Okay. I will spoil it for you. and he's got, like, a mask, obviously. I'd love to see that involved in the Premier League, because all people do is cover their mouths when they're talking to each other. And it's just constant.
Yeah,
it's just constant. Everyone wears a mask.
Yeah.
No one could see anybody else's mouths.
The question was, what would you bring from the NFL, not what would you bring from any scene from anything involving the NFL in any
Marcus,
sort of way?
You know who you're dealing with. It's your own breath you waste.
We're getting closer, aren't we?
I think we've got away lightly there.
Was Gotham City in a virtual game of NFL or not? I don't know. It wasn't college football. It was definitely proper NFL, as I remember rightly.
He's got us over a barrel, ladies and gentlemen.
That's what I have.
The mask would presumably change the players' voices as well, which would be good at the end of the game. Like, the most important thing is the 3 points.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe the playbook. You know that playbook they hide their hands in?
Pete,
anything that disguises what you're up to.
Pete, on one hand, I'm disappointed with the answer. On the other hand, I don't think it's a battle worth having. I maintain that we've got away.
Someone's been away for too long.
We got away lightly there, I think.
Yeah, okay, excellent. Yeah. Appreciate that, Peter.
I do like the rationale, though. It does annoy me when they hide their hand. Because the reason it annoys me, and I might have mentioned this before, is because you've taken our media money.
Yeah.
We want every inch of flesh.
Yeah, and also,
we want to hear what you're saying, and we deserve to hear it.
They should all just have ventriloquism lessons. And be able to throw your voice. Like, you're just talk like that all the time.
What are you doing?
Well, I'm just saying. I'm just saying they shouldn't be covering their mouths. Just learn to not use their lips.
Well, that would be brilliant, because then they could say something about the referee, do an impression of another player.
Yeah.
He goes, right, I heard you there. Yeah. You're off.
You're off.
No, well, I didn't say anything.
I can't say that about my mum.
Yeah, right, exactly. I distinctly heard a Scouse accent. You're the only Scouser on the field, Joey Barton. Get out.
It would have been him, though.
Yeah,
wouldn't it?
To be fair. Yeah. I quite like the officials in the NFL throwing their flags on the pitch when there's something wrong.
Yeah.
So I just like the assistant referees.
Throw the flags.
Yeah.
Maybe specifically if there is an incident that they think warrants a red card. So you'd know. So if it's you know when the lino flags were offside.
You're not sure what he's flagging for necessarily.
Exactly. So instead of like calling the referee over, if he's that sure it's a red card, flag on the pitch, and I was like, oh my goodness.
The reason I love the flag system in NFL is because NFL for two reasons. One is because it's a very macho sport, and that just looks ridiculously camp.
Yeah,
which
because they're flimsy little flags.
It's a great juxtaposition. Like someone casually tossing a yellow flag onto the pitch.
Yeah.
And secondly, because it's so technology based, it seems like a really antiquated way of doing it.
Can
they just continue making it?
Do the sticks remain in the flag? Because that could hurt.
There's
somebody,
no stick in
it?
The flag. It's just like a balled up flag, like a potpourri type thing.
Oh, that's what I mean. That is incredibly.
Which is on their belt, and they rip it off and throw it.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Wow!
It's like a fancy lady from Victorian times dropping her handkerchief.
Spoilers. Haven't got to Victorian times yet.
I think that linesmen should have for serious offences a longer flag. You know, like historically, policemen. The whole idea of the nightstick was because the billy clubs were longer in the evening because there was more trouble.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
so they'd
have
two kinds of sticks. They'd have a day stick, which is shorter, and a nightstick, and that's how the word nightstick.
So
came
basically,
about.
The linesman or the assistant referee, depending on the severity of the offence, he would put his flag up and it would go.
And if it's a really bad offence,
it's a red,
like
if
a toy
it's a
night
really
server.
Bad offence like that. It could be like the sort of vaudevillian hooks that they would have where they drag someone off stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, just pull
like
them off the picture together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think the moral of that is do your thieving during the day.
Yeah,
really. I think so.
I think Pete's got the points.
Yes!
You know.
Hang on, I don't deserve this.
Well, I'm trying
from the man himself.
Steady.
Well, I was doing that to encourage you.
Okay.
You know, you've taken a step in the right direction, and I want to reward that behaviour.
I'm Wayne Hennessy.
He's the carrot, I'm the stick.
Yeah, this is very much, you know, getting a trophy just for taking part.
Yeah, yeah, of course it is. Yeah.
I'm a millennial, technically. Hope yours, Jim.
Jim, you get another I Tried Hard sticker. Yeah. Let's move on to the Premier League, because Crystal Palace wouldn't get such a sticker.
No, they really wouldn't.
What a win for David Moyes' Sunderland. It's not just a loss, it's demoralising for Palace, that result.
Well, Allardyce said, didn't he, after the game, he was like pretty much shell-shocked by it, and you know, the players had played with fear, and he said once that happens, their heads go and they can't make decisions, and he could see it straight away. And yeah, I mean, it's just an absolute battering from David Moyes' Sunderland.
One of the biggest differences in a manager's demeanour before kick-off and after kick-off I think I've ever seen. Yeah. He was dancing with the mascot before the game. Big Sam.
He's like, here's me 3 points.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's me back-to-back wins. No, my platform to build on.
It's almost like he said, I know you miss Pards, but I can dance as well.
Yeah. You've seen me do it in Magaluf or wherever.
He's done two bits
summer.
Of dancing. He did a little kind of like a head wobble on the touchline when he won that one single match.
Yeah, he's won one league game, I think. It was, they beat Bournemouth, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, previously away to Bournemouth, a great result. Mm. Any win on the road
did
is.
Did you see Bournemouth against Everton?
I did. No, no, but as in Palace, you know, any win on the road is essentially great for most teams.
Lest we forget that for large parts of this season, Sunderland have looked like one of the worst Premier League teams ever in history.
Right.
Yeah, and Palace were also at home.
Well, if you look at the bottom half of the table...
4-0 down at half-time.
I mean, they kept a tight second half.
But like two of them were in added time as well.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this. We talked about how unfit Palace were. Yeah. And I wasn't, from one point of view, I wasn't pleased to see it, because obviously Palace fans would be very upset. Mm-hmm. But from a point of view of the Ramblers, we talked about this. We talked about how unfit they look. And lo and behold, they concede 3 goals
yes.
within 2 or 3 minutes of the end of the first half.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
look tired. And at this stage of the season... Very, very dangerous. They're in real trouble, they are.
For the fourth goal, James Tompkins looked pretty much asleep. Just amazing how Defoe turn him like that.
The first goal from Defoe was superbly taken. That was an absolute poacher at his very, very best. That finish across the keeper with supposedly his weaker foot, although Defoe's quite two-footed, you know. Obviously, his strong foot's the right foot, but he uses his left very, very well. Superb finish. The way he turned Tompkins was too easy. £10 million
defender, by the way.
Too easy. I mean, Defoe's point of view, you know, that's a lovely old job, and it's a great striker's goal, but too easy.
The tone was set for the first goal. The first goal when Hennessy just was not strong enough. We talked about Hennessy as well, more recently, about his shortcomings, his failings as a goalkeeper, and they were evident in that first goal. He was not strong enough. What's happened is referees blow up against people challenging goalkeepers so often now. They've almost used it. They start using it as an excuse for not being strong enough. Mm-hmm. It's strange. It's one of these sort of strange things. It's the same with offside when defenders. They appeal for offside. You don't have to appeal for offside. Yeah. Just carry on defending. Mm. Yeah. The assistant, it's not like cricket, but it's a wicket, and it's not a wicket if you don't appeal. If it's offside, the assistant referee is going to give you offside. Carry on defending.
Yeah.
And it's the same with goalkeepers. You can't assume you're going to get a free kick blown against for you. Mm. And Hennessy was just nowhere near strong enough, and that set the tone for the rest of the half.
Yeah,
and that were pulled to pieces.
I think a lot of people were blaming Hennessy, and I think there's a huge amount of the Crystal Palace problems at lid is gigantic feet. But they gave away some very cheap fouls. There was some just pulling and pushing and they just couldn't.
You're right. They couldn't get close.
That was in desperation. That was. I mean, it was so bad that Jack Rodwell was on the winning side. I mean, this has been well reported, but he ended his unwanting 39 match winless streak relating to games in which he started. But Moyes said he spoke to Rodwell beforehand, telling him to step up and produce more. And
just went, it's 39 now, Jack.
Yeah. You don't want 40.
I mean, that is a lot, isn't it?
That started when you were at City.
Yeah. I would have trusted
both of our interests if you stop that.
I would have trusted that testimony a lot more if he'd come. The manager had come out and went before the match and said, "Look, I've told him, put a shift
yeah,
in."
Yeah, okay.
Right, come saying afterwards. He should be saying that every match.
He's after
time. Yeah, I'm not having that.
David Moyes is sitting him down saying, "The thing is, I can't get my head around, Jack. Is this your only job, isn't it? you're doing anything else?
It's true.
39 in a row.
I know.
That's a lot. Essentially, anyone in this room could do that.
Mm. He did. He played well though, didn't he, Robert? Give him credit. He got injured, didn't he?
He did. Which is sort of par for the course, I suppose. It's like Andy Cowan every week. Every week he's got some sort of minor injury.
But when he's not, he's absolutely blisteringly good.
I thought Palace were very, very poor. Palace fans don't need me to say that. They were beaten 4-0 at home by Sunderland. But they were genuinely very poor.
But the thing is, it's after getting a win recently and looking like they were going to put, you know, hopefully a run together, as we were talking about on the preview show. Like, it's just such a ridiculous capitulation. It really smacked the lack of effort and application. They look
no better than they did under Pardew. Pete said a week or two ago, you know, Pardew, he's got one trick, and when it goes, it's gone. And he'll occasionally pull out a fake, a sort of occasionally a fluky result or something like that. That's now what the Bournemouth game looks like to Allardyce.
Does it? Well, 4 points from a possible 18 since Allardyce took over. They have not had the lift that everyone assumed that they would have when Allardyce went there.
It's looking like, I mean, the thing is, and Hull are making moves in the right direction.
Well, absolutely.
Swansea, I know, were beaten, but they look at
the bottom of the table. I mean, that win was so important for Sunderland, because had they have lost, they would have been adrift.
They didn't lose Larson either, which they should have done. Hull and Downs are hurt at one point. It's like, they should have gone off, and that could have changed things. It was 1-0, wasn't it, at that point?
I forget now, but of course, a man setting off would have changed things. Mm. But Sunderland are 2 points from safety now. Obviously, Palace are on the same points as them. And Hull City have improved. In fact, David Moyes was told after the win that Hull had beaten Liverpool, and he looked surprised and went, effing hell, did they really? Incredible.
Oh, right.
You know?
It's a
little bit disappointed, I suppose, in one sentence.
I wasn't hugely surprised that Hull beat Liverpool. I think, but
how, though? Because Marco Silva, look, he didn't know the league.
Well, that's the problem.
Holland fell on Sky Sports.
This man, he wasn't even... He shouldn't have even put professional manager on his CV.
What's he know about Hull?
Yeah.
What does anyone know about Hull?
The general rule about that sort of stuff is that when we hear like a new manager coming to the league, I like to think we do a little bit of research, have a look into it. If you don't know anything, don't say anything. You don't have to.
Yeah, yeah. But the ounce of research.
I know. Yeah.
Sure, I could win the league with Olympiacos.
Pete, listen, most people say that to me, I would agree, not you.
Did they drop just 4 points all season or something like that? And the side that he got into the Portuguese top tier. Yeah, exactly. It looked like he could come in and at least make them a little bit better, because Mike More Than a Feeling, as much as we like him, he wasn't cutting the mustard there for whatever reason. The man's had a good career.
He's not that good.
But, well, that would be one of the reasons.
Yeah. There's a flaw, that.
Yeah. But they needed to roll the dice, and they have, and it looks like it might well pay off. Look.
Mm. Yeah, well, it does. Liverpool's problem in this game, and moreover, sort of generally, is that they can't break teams down. So what happens? They don't move the ball quick enough. They can't do anything to break teams down. So teams know. Mm-hmm. Hull...
That's generally a problem as well.
Yeah, I don't want to take... I'm not suggesting that, you know, Hull shouldn't take credit for this result, because they should. But what I'm saying is, in one way, it was fairly easy for Hull, because their assignment was just to sit there nice and tight, compact, and just pick Liverpool off. And Liverpool are so poor defensively for a team of that standing that they can be picked off. And that's why Liverpool had a bit more joy against Chelsea, because Chelsea came at them, left gaps all over the place. If you look at Klopp's record, I haven't got it in front of me, but I'm
decent against top six.
Exactly. So he gets bigger teams, he gets a lot more joy, he's a lot more space to implement the way he wants to play. Hull were just able to keep it tight, sit back, soak it all up, and then score. And Nias, I thought, had a good game. I thought he took his goal well. And the one thing that sort of struck me about this game as well was the Mignolet situation. Mm. I mean, you've got to really side. I think they've got to side with Karius now. I think Mignolet...
I agree with that.
I think Mignolet's, what is he, 28, something like that now? He's probably not going to get any better.
He's not the keeper that they're looking for. They signed him on a slight hope, and maybe there was a slight whim as well. He was a decent keeper at a certain level, but he's not that top-level keeper.
And at least with Karius, he's probably going to improve. Liverpool's season is... I mean, I saw someone say that over the weekend. Liverpool's season is, to all intents and purposes, is done now. So put Karius in there, give him a lot more experience. They obviously bought him for a reason. Klopp seems to have a lot of control over transfers there. Mm. He's bought him for a reason. He likes what he sees in him. Let him get used to the Premier League for the rest of the season, and hopefully he can start a new season with a good, solid sort of foundation for your defensive unit in the shape of a keeper who hopefully is the keeper they hope he is.
Is there not an argument to give him a chance with a face paint?
Yeah, that's not going to harm his... what we've learned tonight, Jim, that's not going to harm his chances.
No.
You know, every little helps.
That's right, yeah. I mean, I think that with a team whose season is pretty much done and dusted, obviously it isn't, because they've got to fight for the top four, so... take that with a pinch of salt, of course. But actually, one of the positives that you can always turn in football a negative into a positive, or you can try. And for Liverpool, it's kind of like, right, now almost like build for next season. Obviously, try and secure top four. But you're right, Luke, there's just no point in carrying on with Mignolet unless they think we just need to give Karius a little bit more time because his head's not in the right place. That's understandable. But get him in there. And there's shades of David De Gea there.
Do you know what I think with Mignolet? I think his problem is... he has a concentration issue.
Yeah.
If you look at the games he plays poorly in, it tends to be against lower opposition, which I admit is a bit of confirmation bias, and it makes it stand out more because they're not expected to lose those games. When he's called into action a lot, I think he can look quite good.
Yeah.
But it's when he doesn't do anything for a while, and as they always say, that's a hallmark of a really top keeper. He can just maintain his concentration when called upon, do what he needs to do. I think Mignolet really struggles with that, and I don't think that's necessarily something he's going to improve upon at the age of 28. I mean, I might be wrong, but I think they've sided with Karius, they bought him for a reason, they should go with him, and that might make a lot more difference in the long term.
Yeah, it must be so frustrating
for Liverpool fans at the moment after this run, because they were going so well. And as you say, Marcus, it is, you know, of course they're now still fighting to get in the top four, but that wasn't what their ambition would have been at the start of the season. They'd have hoped to have been a bit more competitive than that. And that is effectively where they were at this time last year, isn't it? It's just same old again.
Well, you kind of forget that the last time they mounted a title challenge, they had ridiculous footballers up top. So it's going to be slightly different.
But he's well off of the boil. But they're going to get Suarez back. That's what they need to do.
The problem is, it's plain as day. The problem is that they start off like a house on fire. They score goals. They move the ball quickly. They swashbuckling attack. Then they get knackered.
Yeah.
What happens when they get knackered? Well, they can't move the ball quick enough, and they make mistakes.
But they don't have a big enough squad at the moment. They need to. I mean, you know, Klopp wasn't making excuses about lack of signings, but that's what I mean. Build for next season now. And I know Liverpool fans don't want to think, well, we're talking about next season. But the fact of the matter is they're not going to win the league. They're not. Chelsea are going to win the league.
Yeah.
That's quite clear. Yeah. That is reinforced every week.
Yeah.
And there's no shame in finishing in the top four. It's a flipping good thing to do. And then build for that next season, because Klopp will be given time. You know, if he finishes fifth, or dare I even suggest sixth, they're not going to sack him, and they shouldn't sack him.
They give their managers time, don't they? And that's to be applauded, I think. But the main worry for me, if were I a Liverpool fan, would be how vulnerable they are to the counter. Again, like, we've been saying this for weeks now. It's such a simple tactic. But before Niasse's goal, Abel Hernandez had a chance as well. Like, just hit him fairly simply on the break. And they just seem so vulnerable to such a simple thing.
They do bunch up around players, though. And if you beat that first line, it's like, oh, we've got a lot more space now, haven't we? Oh, dear.
They're not free scoring like their neighbours.
No.
Everton 6, Bournemouth 3.
Oh, my God.
A lot of fantasy league chat this weekend about Lukaku.
Oh, my God.
Everyone seemed to drop him or something. I don't know.
He was your captain.
Adam was my captain.
Did you really?
I thought he was incredible. I thought he was probably the best individual performance of the season.
Magnificent. Mm.
His
array
with aplomb.
Yeah,
he?
Exactly, Jim. His array of finishes in that game were delightful. The second one, because actually, when I was watching the game, when the ball came along to him, I thought what he's going to do is he's just going to try and just tuck it under the keeper, or just swing his boot at it, and the keeper's going to smother it. And that dink little finish. Glorious. Utterly glorious.
He terrorised them. And why I say for me it was one of, if not the best, one of the best individual performances of the season, is because he seemed to affect the whole team. He affected Bournemouth in their entirety just by obviously starting off so quickly. Mm-hmm. And if you looked, I know Bournemouth had a bit of joy in front of goal and they were able to score a few, but the first sort of 15, 20 minutes from what I saw, Bournemouth just looked shell-shocked. They were terrified of Lukaku. They couldn't get the ball out of their own territory. And that just shows you why managers will pay a huge amount of money for Lukaku, because when he's on song, unplayable player. He's just unplayable. He can score every type of goal. He's strong. He's fast. He's just a nightmare to play.
Brings other players in as well. He's so...
He's got everything.
He's still so young, isn't he? What, 23. Got 23? 23. Yeah, it's phenomenal. We're so blessed to have him here.
Indeed. And Koeman is saying, you know, he sort of not belongs at a bigger club, but, you know, he should play at a bigger level. And I think to myself, yes, Koeman, and that's when you're managing at the better level. Yeah. That's basically what he's saying.
He's earmarked him.
Yeah. You're not going to lose just him, you're going to lose me and him.
Don't worry, Ron, wherever I go, you're coming to me.
Telling you.
But Everton did look a little bit soft-centred at times. Some of the goals...
Well, they conceded three.
Yeah, and one or two of them were really, really poor. But it doesn't matter when they scored six.
Pete, what do you think of Ross Barkley's pre-celebration?
I don't like to see that. No, I don't like to see that.
Do you know what? I quite like it.
I'm not sure.
Why not?
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards
there was
that.
There was a defender on guard.
Did Barkley see him though? I wondered that.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah,
I'm not worried about that. It's more like quite disrespectful to the opposition. But a bit of overconfidence like that from an English player sometimes is quite nice.
We've been praising players' honesty recently. Maybe Ross Barkley is a bit of a dickhead.
I think I'm going to score, and he was very honest.
Yeah, but the thing is, you've got to be careful, because we always moan about England not producing players like that with a bit of swagger,
right?
And a bit of confidence.
Yeah, right,
and we want them to be, you know, prim and proper and do the things the right way and tackle. Like Jack Wilshere said something a while back in the old, England need to realise what they're good at, which is tackling hard. And it's like, well, we've got a player like that who needs to be nurtured. And fine, he needs a bit of guidance, a bit of management. Koeman's dropped him here and there and asked questions about his dedication, all that other stuff, saying at his age he should be influencing games more. That shows to me that he's a confident player at the moment, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing for the league, it's a good thing for Everton, it could be a good thing for England. So we've got to be careful about and not liking it. That's what I'm saying.
We've been talking about the NFL. What always makes me laugh about watching American football, which I don't do too often, obviously, but is when a player like makes an interception or something like that, and then starts mouthing off the other one, and then starts like celebrating like they've just won the game.
You've got to be careful, because I think you can be fined in the NFL for over celebrating.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. And then Barkley does that, and people go, "I'm not too sure."
Yeah.
We're English, we don't like that.
Yeah, English people are uncomfortable with that sort of thing, and I think it's actually what makes teams like, you know, Argentina, Brazil, even Germany, with that arrogance, makes them better.
How many teams celebrate before they scored a goal?
He's going to score, isn't he? He's not going to not score.
They were 5-3 up with it in the dying seconds, even if he'd have missed.
Yeah.
They would have still been okay.
I don't know. We are quite arrogant. Look at our complete lack of preparation for the Iceland game, for example.
But I think it's different.
It's a very different thing.
Arrogance is in arrogance.
Yeah, right. Arrogance and lack of preparation. Yeah.
Very much my forte, mate. Trust me on this. There are many different types of arrogance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but Marco Silva.
He knows the Hubris colour wheel.
Yeah. But look, we talked about some of the pundits' reaction to Marco Silva. You know, there's almost an arrogance in that.
Yeah.
So it's there in some ways.
It's in the wrong place.
That's what we won't have a bit of swagger, but the arrogance and the swagger.
But, sorry, before you move on, 31 goals conceded in 12 games for Bournemouth. Do you think they're going to get sucked into the battle? Because
no, I think they'll be fine.
No.
You think they will? Because they're on a bad streak.
It's three from six at the bottom.
Yeah, exactly. There's no way Bournemouth are going to get sucked into that, I don't think. We're going to talk more Premier League after this.
Hi, I'm Linvoy Primus, and you're listening to the Football Ramble. I'm Linvoy Primus, and you're listening to the Football Ramble.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. It's time for emails with Pete Donaldson.
Oh, Pete, it's your time to shine.
Now, we had some exciting emails, Peter, on
the
last show.
We're on the hunt, aren't we?
We are.
We've got
on the
bit between our teeth. We want to learn about the Rambler, the Football Ramble listener who's played at the highest level of football.
Yeah, we do need a corrections and clarification, though. Highland League is fifth tier.
You never get involved in the corrections and clarifications unless it's Scotland. Outrageous.
It's nice to have someone else doing this.
Yeah, Highland League is fifth tier because we said it. Didn't the emailer say it was fifth tier?
The emailer said it was fifth tier, yeah.
We need a steward's inquiry.
This is why, and I've mentioned this a few times, you can't trust these listeners.
Yeah.
It's got to be provable.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is, if you say, like, all right, that's provable, but if you say you played at a certain level, there's a certain level of trust here.
Old Donald Trump over there. We can't trust these listeners.
It's a basic level of trust.
Fake news.
Fine, there's a basic level of trust, but that sort of stuff, that sort of thing from Thursday just undermines any trust I've got in this process.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to put up a firewall. Put up a big firewall, we'll keep them all out.
The higher we get, though, up this, the closer we get to the Premier Divisions of each country, I think it's going to be much easier to Google.
We found this.
I've double-checked a few today.
Well, didn't you say that there was a chap who played, was it in the FA Cup first round, the keeper who scored?
That's checkable.
Now, yeah. I believe...
We got a video of it.
We've got a video of it. We need videos.
His actual description of how the goal went was so inaccurate.
Okay.
He said it was a bullet header.
Yeah, right.
It was not a bullet header.
So he plays, or played, 8th-tier English football,
right.
I think we worked out. So what would be a high standard? Because we said, the Highland League football. Would 5th-tier Scottish and 8th-tier
well,
English...
I think
quite
you've,
similar.
I think you've got a goal with coefficients in your particular federation.
But the coefficients are how the national side...
I've created a monster here, haven't I?
You have.
No, it's not the coefficient. The coefficient of the league system.
Okay.
It affects seedings in, Europe, which is a pretty good standard.
Okay,
so what we got this time around, Peter?
Well, we've got a man by the name of Grimmer Johansson.
Okay.
He's from Iceland, where you've just been, Luke.
I'm back.
I have actually played 20 minutes in the top flight.
Ooh.
Of Iceland.
Hang on.
Iceland's top
flight. No.
Steady. Okay, it was the Luxembourgish top flight. Division. As a 17-year-old, he played alongside René Peters, the 93 caps for Luxembourg.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, but he basically said, I don't have any actual stats on this, but there can't be many Icelanders who played in the Luxembourgish League. Well, I am at least one.
Not what we were looking for, but I appreciate the email.
Higher than Scotland, isn't it, coefficient-wise, I would think.
No,
Luxembourg. sorry, I thought you were being serious.
Right, Matthew. Hello, Matthew. In regards to your listener who's played at the highest level segment, I'd like to put forward my flatmate and fellow long-time listener, Daniel Crisp, who is currently playing centre-back for Inverurie Loco Works
in the
Highland League, Scottish 4th tier.
Oh, it isn't Scottish 4th tier. It's Scottish 5th tier.
We've been through this established.
No, because he said, Daniel is furious after hearing you lot say that Joe Cockpenny, former reject for local rivals Huntley FC, is the listener who's played at the highest level. And he's taking his claim for the top spot.
Pete, I'm just going to say a few things to you. One, Scottish Premiership. Two,
right.
Scottish Championship.
Right.
Three, Scottish League One.
Yep.
Scottish League Two.
Right.
That's four.
Yeah. Right.
But then the Highland League.
But wait, the Highland League. But wasn't it called something different last week? Because he put the sponsor in, didn't he?
Last week.
Let me sort this out.
You're thinking with the Evo shtick, that's the English one.
Let me sort this out for you. Daniel Crisp, stop fucking wasting our time. Next email.
No, right. It's the Press and Journal Highland League.
Right.
So that's still fifth tier.
Well, they might be higher in the league.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Right, next email. Shut up, everyone.
Right. Yeah, everyone.
I've played in the Welsh League Division 2.
Next.
Yeah, next. It's
Thank you, Stuart, for that.
Who did he play for? Did, give him a little bench.
It's two leagues below the Welsh Premier League in the Pyramid. I played for Cardiff Corinthians AFC.
Well, Cardiff's
oldest football club.
Okay. Well, okay.
Again, next.
Right.
Appreciate the email.
Gaz. Hello, Gaz. Long time listener to the show. I'm depressed now.
I currently play out front for Sevilla.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we might have a winner here.
Okay.
I'm an ex-professional and youth team goalkeeper for Crystal Palace.
Hang on,
I was at the club for 5 years. I made my debut against Liverpool in the then Worthington Cup following the dismissal of Alexander Klinko for a rather cynical professional foul.
So you actually played for the first team of Crystal Palace against Liverpool.
Right.
Now
okay.
We're talking. This is what I had in mind when I filled this up in the first place.
Where were Palace in the league? Or what division were they when he played?
Well, I think it was 2002, I think I googled. I then found myself back at Palace in the first team action for Trevor Francis' first game in charge against Birmingham City. It was ironically Steve Bruce's first game in charge for the Blues, as the two managers had traded post the previous week. Strange set of happenings. I'm also a Welsh under-15, under-16, under-18 and under-21 international.
Wonderful. Nice. So wonderful. When I thought of this up a while ago, I was thinking of having Ian Rush emailing in.
Ian Rush.
You know, all sorts. Yeah.
This isn't too bad.
What was Gaz's actual name?
Steady. Gary Hatley.
Gary Hatley, okay.
He's now the sales manager for Andaman Ceramics. I don't mind giving him a plug.
The Ferrari of the ceramics industry.
Yeah. Get this, right?
Got your brother Mark to email him. He played it a bit this time.
He was also signed by Paul Gascoigne during his stint at Kettering.
Okay.
Oh, right.
It's pure comedy gold.
I'd love to hear more about that. Yeah.
The conclusion of training one night, returning to the dressing room to find 30 pizzas had been delivered because the gaffer thought it would be amusing.
Yeah, it's not amusing. The man's got a serious illness.
Yeah. All right. Gary Hatley, thank you for that. PPS, I like Donnie a lot. I wonder how that one got read out.
Yeah. That's the spirit.
Did you add that?
PPS, I'm available to play in the Ramble Five-a-Side team, should you ever need me.
Okay. We've already got.
Is there any PPI in there?
Hello to Dave McGillan.
Okay.
Hello, Ramblers. I was on holiday when the wife of a... I was on holiday with a wife, blah, blah, blah. And I hung out with a bloke and talked about football, much to the chagrin of my good lady wife. That night in the pub, the footy talk continued. We talked about our dizzying heights of our playing careers. I talked about almost single-handedly winning the under-10s championship at Butlins Barry Island in 1983. Basically, they were sharing a love of the football ramble.
Oh, right.
Him and this guy, this dude. As I sat back smugly, talking about my football...
Well, it's a great achievement.
You know, Butlins Barry Island, 1983, two goals and a two-on final, fantastic. I sat back smugly and took a self-satisfied swig of lager. my new friend proceeded to tell me about his illustrious early career at Dynamo Zagreb.
Ah, ooh. Who was it?
His family had moved over from the US for work, and the teenage Danny was signed by the Croatian champions to play in the big number 9 role. I can't remember how many games he played, but he said shortly after his arrival, he was replaced by none other than Nikol Krankjar, who became Dynamo's youngest ever captain. So, obviously, Dynamo Zagreb are obviously higher than the fourth tier of Scottish football, the fifth, you'd imagine.
Yeah.
So that would make him the new leader, even if he only played one game. I thought about Googling Danny to try and confirm his story, but then thought I'd rather not know the truth unless I hear it from the man himself writing into the ramble. So basically, this is him asking Danny... are you still listening, mate? Are you the Ramble listener who's played at the highest level?
He's just a conduit now.
I was about to say, surely
Gary Hatley still.
Yeah,
counts.
No, Hatley's still. Hatley's
okay,
well,
yeah, well,
hang
okay,
on a minute. So, I'm not sure about that.
What?
Playing for Crystal Palace in the Worthington Cup.
Yeah.
Is that definitely better than playing for Dynamo Zagreb?
Yeah.
It's second hand. No, it's not.
Surely.
I'd say it's not.
It is.
Massively, no, it's not.
Well, the Croatian league's not that high on the card.
Dynamo Zagreb.
They're a Champions League specialist.
If he didn't play in the Champions League.
Yeah, true. Anyway,
he played for the team who are like.
We'll see if we get in touch.
The
we'll
Champions League botherers. Well, basically, yeah, so we're basically a conduit. I'm going to leave with this one. Dave says, hiya, fucking Donaldson, constantly having digs at Sunderland as a city when the man's from fucking Hartlepool, one of the biggest shitholes in the country. Taking jip from someone actually from Newcastle is all right, as they have a right to have a pop. A classic hipster who's moved to London and ridicules smaller cities to make him look cooler and remind everyone he lives in Soho. A monkey hanger pretending to be a Geordie who lives in London. Stop trying to be quirky for 2 minutes and get a fucking haircut, for fuck's sake. Love you already. Peace out, Dev. Can't really.
He's got your number
in. Absolute nailed on.
In the team with Hall of Fame.
Couldn't have put it better myself.
Thank you, Dave.
That's the sort of email. That's what I want. I found it hard to vocalise what I was after when I was talking about emails. That's just showing me exactly what I want.
It just gets us.
Yeah.
We did also get an email from an ITK.
Oh, yes, we did. And in the know.
How do you want to sell this? Because he doesn't want us to use his name. He doesn't want us to read out the email.
Well, I'll tell the story. Real quick, and you can finish it off. You can have the tap in.
Still reeling from that last one.
We got an email from a guy who we won't name him because it'll be unfair. He doesn't want to be named. So he knows on good authority, in quotes.
Here we go.
Definitely that Arsene Wenger isn't going to sign a new contract at Arsenal. So he's going to be leaving in the summer. Is what he's implying. He says, I don't want you to read this email out. Really,
before the Chelsea match as well. Apparently,
yeah. This is before Chelsea. I don't want this email read out. I don't really want to be named. Just trust me, I know. So between us, me and Lord Ramble forwarded it on to Pete, and said this would be a good email to read out. And Pete did this thing on Google. He's obviously a bit of a whiz on the computer and stuff. Found out, Googled the guy's name, found out. And what was he, Pete?
He doesn't work for Arsenal, I know that.
I think he works as a sort of in Harrogate.
Right, okay.
So it might not be true. But anyway, on the off chance that it is actually true, okay. Breaking news.
Yeah. I might bleep out where you said he worked as well, just in case.
Enough,
sorry.
Yeah.
All
right,
okay,
yeah.
There we go.
Oh, nice. Do it again.
Can I have one, Luke?
Yeah, go.
Yeah. All right, so there we are. Well, are the emails finished? Is that
the emails are finished?
Neatly leads us on to Chelsea 3 Arsenal.
Oh, we could probably just not bother with this one. The email section was quite long, wasn't it?
Yeah,
this one.
Wenger's leaving. It's going to be okay. And the man from the he's certainly going to have a career in journalism now. Same old, Jim.
Oh, very much so, absolutely. And it's interesting that point about Wenger was made because there's been a lot of talk of Max Allegri recently, and also earlier in the season there was a link to the guy who is the manager of RB Leipzig. I forget his name because it's confusing. This is really rare. You know, we've not heard this before. We've not heard managers being linked to the job.
Klopp was linked for a while.
No, but only really tenuously, like sort of a what if one day. I think that means Arsenal are looking around, like behind the scenes, to try and replace Wenger. And I think, you know, it's been 20 billion years now, so like I think, you know, it does make sense that this summer he would call it a day. But I mean, that performance was ridiculous, and I know Arsenal were hindered by having very much a makeshift midfield, and Coquelin was probably never really going to compete against Matic and Kante in there, but it was a very, very poor performance, the likes of which we've just seen too many times. Really.
I really enjoyed James Ollie wrote a really interesting piece in the London Evening Standard today, which you would get online. If you're not in London, you better get it online, I'm sure. Talks a bit about Arsenal's problems and different bits and pieces around their training methods and the fact that they went into this new stadium, which looks like, in hindsight, like a really odd and difficult time for various different reasons. Worth reading. I thought they were really poor against Chelsea, I have to say. But as Jim's just touched on, really, I mean, are they going to compete in that midfield area? Probably not. And I think Chelsea are a good team, as you said earlier, Marcus, best team in the Premier League. So not a disgrace, is it? It's just every time.
Carragher said that Arsenal going away to Chelsea. Yes, there are anomalies in there, and I know there is. But he said it's the same old thing. Chelsea always get the first goal, and then Arsenal tend to have a bit of the ball and so on.
They don't compete physically.
No, and then Chelsea hit them on the break again. I mean, how many times would we see this when Drogba played for Chelsea?
Yeah, he would
Arsenal would have the ball, and then Drogba would say, "Hang on, give me. I've had enough of this being 0-0. And just whack them out the way and score.
The worst thing is it used to be the other way around. Oh, the Hazard goal was ridiculous. Coquelin like fell over.
Well, to be fair to Coquelin, at least he tried to bring him down.
Yeah, well, but it was very, very weak.
The two key incidents in the game. One was the first goal, which was essentially a clash of heights, and Arsenal fans. I personally didn't think it was a foul. Arsenal fans are complaining about a foul.
I initially thought it could have been, but Dermot Gallagher.
But just win the ball. Just you're a defensive player. Get up there and win the ball.
Cech didn't really seem to make much. I know it's a close range header. I don't want to slag him too much, but the way he just sort of watched it go into the net.
And the second point was that Hazard just ghosted past about four players.
Yeah.
Yeah, fine about Coquelin, he did try and bring him down, but not strong enough. He's a defensive midfield player. Yeah. I know Hazard's got a lot of junk in that trunk.
Koscielny as well, he just shepherded him just too much. That's all he did, rather than actually sort of putting a challenge in. And I know it's difficult when he's moving at that pace, especially in the box, but they needed to do better in that. They just needed to be stronger. And I don't know, they do play with a little bit of kind of fear of making a decision almost sometimes. I guess when the game's played at that sort of pace with a player like Hazard bearing down on you, you're kind of more worried about, I don't know, fouling him and giving away a penalty, but you just got to be stronger and more
decisive. Foul him early. They could have had 10 seconds to foul him before he got the press.
So the third one was a bit soft.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, God, what a weird parallel universe where Petr Cech is setting up goals from the Arsenal goal for Cesc Fabregas playing for Chelsea. What happened? We're in the darkest timeline, surely.
The thing is, we could go into more detail about how the game panned out, but it is the same old. Yeah. Like, there's no
We've
point.
Been doing this a lot lately exactly. about Arsenal.
We just need a soundboard for this.
I was watching the match with friend of the Ramble, Matt Riley, and we saw Giroud was going to be on the bench, and he said, oh, well, he'll be on for his consolation probably a few minutes before time, and it's 3-0 or something.
That said...
Perfectly.
That said, we hadn't scored at Stamford Bridge since about... I don't know whether it's 2014 or 2013, but Germany we don't even score.
They'll be making the DVD then.
a bit of progress, Jim, is what you're suggesting.
But, incremental gains, Jim.
I don't know why you guys are spinning this as a negative.
What do you reckon is it? Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain apparently accidentally liking a Wenger Must Go post on Facebook.
That is,
I think it's frankly beneath you to mention it on this show.
Yeah. Okay? I agree with him on that one.
But as we said, it's the same old, and... Yeah, let's move on, Jim, for your sake, in all the Arsenal
Can we all
fans.
Just move on?
Yeah, indeed, yeah. Chelsea pretty much wrapped up the league, you could argue. But West Brom beat Stoke City in an interesting game where Saido came on, but he didn't make a difference.
Yeah, I was hoping he'd sort of get to go out on a high.
Can I read a quote from you guys, for you guys, about this game, and I want you to try and guess who the quote's from.
Mm-hmm.
It's related to this game.
Mm-hmm.
I always think, as a visiting manager, I am a guest of their club, and there should be a gesture.
Is he referring to
it's
a handshake, and is it Mark Hughes?
Mark Hughes' handshake, Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, it is.
It's phenomenal, isn't it?
Sorry, was there a game? I can't fix talking about the
Does
handshake.
Does he get paid in handshakes?
He must.
I don't think he takes money.
I always think, as a visiting manager, I'm a guest of their club, there should really be a gesture.
Imagine having that in your that. Does he think Pugh should be going around shaking the fans of every supporter that's come as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, I know, like, right?
Wasn't this Brian Clough's great beef with Don Revie was because when Revie turned up with his lead side when he was in charge of Derby, they sort of swanned in and swanned out and didn't really say hi, and he didn't stay for a glass of wine after. And from that moment, Clough was like, right, I hate you, and I will hate you for the rest of my life no matter what you do.
Yeah.
Hughes is almost like... It's like
he can't focus on anything else. Yeah. He's completely unaware. Like, he's not got the self-awareness to realise.
He's an inverse germaphobe.
He's got his own trope about handshakes. It's just odd. It's like an odd juxtaposition.
And it's also a really obvious way to wind him up as well. Because didn't he say that Pulis didn't shake his hand before the game?
Yeah.
Like, if you want any sort of basic mind game against Mark Hughes, just don't shake his hand. Yeah. It's out in the open.
You'd have to be a brave man.
I was going
to
say. it's okay for Pulis, Jim.
Yeah. Pulis has shown that he can get down the trenches and fight. Pulis is fine. He had to spare a second thought about not shaking his hand. But for people in this room, very ballsy move.
I thought if there was a moment where Berahino was put through on goal and had a big long run, I would have fancied Pulis to run onto the pitch.
Side out!
Elbow him.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Send me off fine. Worth it.
Do a Gary Monk.
Yeah.
Oh, that was amazing.
Yeah.
He just stepped out in front of him, didn't he? Yeah. Brilliant.
But what emerged before the game, obviously, Berahino served an eight-week ban for failing a drugs test. That was what was reported. And Hughes said, West Brom kept it under wraps for 6 or 7 months. And then, lo and behold, it came out before the game. Because I thought to myself, West Brom have done very well to keep that under wraps. Why is it? Oh, yeah, they're playing them.
Yeah.
it's amazing. It does make you wonder how often that sort of stuff happens, though, doesn't it? If there is clearly a culture of lying about that kind of thing.
Let's speculate, Jim. Who
do you think it was? What drug do you think it was?
Yeah. I think we've got just enough time to talk briefly about Manchester City against Swansea, because Gabriel Jesus is looking quite the player.
Mm. Oh, isn't he just? So much so that Sergio Aguero's career seems to be over at City all of a sudden.
And that was quick, wasn't it?
I love all the stats. Well, actually, statistically, with Jesus in the side, they're better off than Aguero. Hang on.
There's a serious discussion about that, and I forget which pundit it was, but Aguero's one of the best Premier League strikers of all time.
Yeah. It's just incredible, isn't it? Swansea looks so much better under Clement.
They really do.
I'm lucky not to get a point.
You're persevering with Clement.
Yeah.
Paul Clement.
Well, we said Harve Renard for a while, which is because it's Harve, so, you know.
I think Swansea, that was a bonus fixture for them. They didn't want to get battered. They didn't get battered.
Mm. Close to getting a point.
And in fact, if people were listening to the Absolute Radio on Sunday afternoon... here it comes. You two are like this.
Go on.
If you listen to Absolute Radio on Sunday afternoon like I was...
I was getting a hot chocolate.
In the car.
No.
One of our number, we shall remain nameless,
with a national radio show,
called this a one-all draw. Ah. And then recently come off the back of Dire Straits' Romeo and Juliet, saying, oh, actually, no, Man City did score a winner, so sorry about that, everyone.
Well, what I would say is that the television that I was watching at the time, the aspect ratio was all wrong.
We're showing a different game.
We're showing a the aspect ratio was all wrong. The BBC website didn't update quickly enough, so I had to make do with my own predictions. Because I went to get a creamy chunk from the kitchen. Yourself,
there's never late goals in the Premier League.
The best thing about it is, just don't mention it.
Yeah.
Just wait.
I love that.
Just wait.
TV's fault. After Brexit, you're just hitting your telly going, that can't be right.
I got really excited.
I was driving back from the airport and with my wife, and she was saying, why are you laughing so much at this? And I was like, you have to know, Pete. You have to know.
I'm listening to the end of
Because I'm a real stickler for accuracy, aren't I? Yeah. I'm a real ass.
Yeah. She's not as familiar with your Uber as I am. Right, okay. Is, yeah.
And say that to your boss.
Despite the rumours. Anyway, I thought the Swans were all right. I thought they had a few decent chances when they went a goal down. They obviously pegged it back to 1-0. I think you're right, Mark, doesn't they? Look good, and I think it's bad news for teams like Crystal Palace and Leicester, by the way, who are sleepwalking their way into a disaster. Because Swansea are showing something, and so are Hull.
The only reason why they conceded that second goal was because Carl Norton switched off terribly, and Jesus came in, and
they could have got out of that with a draw, couldn't they?
Yeah, they really should have done.
But they're not going to go away from it feeling sort of demoralised, you wouldn't think. And you know, as you say, they performed well, so I feel they'll be confident that they can sort of keep that run of form.
Well, just to give you a bit of context, like they've got a really good March, Swansea. They play Burnley at home, Hull and Bournemouth in March. So it was important for their confidence for them not to get absolutely hammered at Man City, by the way. It's a tough game, probably alongside Chelsea away, the toughest game of the season.
It's true.
So for them to come out of that 2-1 and consider themselves unlucky, they can build on that in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, they've lost, but to put it in more context, it's not a 4-0 home loss to Sunderland. We're going to talk about the Championship and a little bit more after this.
I'm so fancy, but you already know. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. I'm so fancy, but you already know.
Just sensational. Sensational.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Don't forget the preview show, sponsored by Bet365, is out this Friday. Our bet was Chelsea win, but Diego Costa to score first, wasn't it,
Peter? He hit the bar, though, didn't he, in the build-up, deliberately, because he hates charity.
That was a shame.
For the avoidance of that, that doesn't count.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get it right this Friday, so make sure you tune in. Let's go to the Championship. Newcastle back on top!
Yeah!
They're back on top.
Brighton are having a bit of a blip, aren't they?
Although they did well in the circumstances to draw away to Brentford. Brentford is what I was trying to say. In the Steve McLaren derby, though, Newcastle beat Derby 1-0 at home, which was... we don't think it's called that?
The big... No, it's probably not. It should be called the Hare Island derby, maybe. The big story was the one we just alluded to earlier with the Gary Monk thing. For those who haven't seen this, Huddersfield beat Leeds in the West Yorkshire derby. There's a lot of shouts for this in the highlights of the week, actually, but I thought I'd bring it up now. Huddersfield scored to make it 2-1 in the 89th minute.
Yeah. Going for promotion.
Yeah, and David Wagner legged it up to celebrate with the fans. You see this?
Yeah.
To celebrate with the fans. As he was running back, with his team, it was so obvious. Like, Gary Monk stepped right in his path, caused like a huge ruckus. Both managers were sent off.
But Monk then tried to make it look like Wagner had run into him on purpose.
Yeah.
It was like if you see like a shoplifter running down the street being chased by a security guard, you think, I could just step in front and then
I'll have a go here.
He's not going to necessarily want to kill me.
No.
If I'm named and caught.
They were both given their marching orders. Speaking of that, Marcus witnessed this. The other day we were walking through Piccadilly Circus and I saw a lady drop a £10 note.
You did?
And I picked it up and gave it to her, said, "You drop this." Dropped my sunglasses when I was in Iceland. No one picked them up. No one gave them back to me. Lost them, didn't I? So much for karma.
They keep mugging us off, don't they, in Iceland?
Karma keeps mugging us off.
Gary Monk can consider himself very, very fortunate not to get a fine or a ban here. Disgraceful behaviour.
Yeah, Wagner did absolutely love it.
Oh, it's absolutely classy.
He has to stay in his technical area. The match was still going on, wasn't it?
But the point is, Gary Monk said what he did was classless and he expected better. That's fine. Don't then lower yourself to that level on purpose just to make a point. Let them get on with it.
To be fair, manager's over-celebrating. Conte dived into the crowd.
He did, yeah.
I'm okay with it, I think.
Really? Apparently, yeah. Don't you get like 3 offences for stuff like that as a manager?
Yeah.
Well, the reason that you're not allowed to celebrate in the crowd is, it's obviously a safety issue. Mm. It's not like one of these rules or laws that
taking your shirt off.
Yeah, we all think, what the hell is this for? There's actually a reason for that. So don't endorse young children at the front of football games getting hurt, please, Mark.
Yeah.
You're not above that.
It causes someone to drop a Bovril.
Yeah.
All right, I didn't think of the Bovril.
Yeah.
No, you speak about
you never do.
Only when I'm there. Yeah. Before we move on to the African Cup of Nations, League 2, little mention for Exeter City. Unbeaten since the 22nd of November, winning 10 out of 12. They're fourth, 4 points off automatic promotion.
Yeah, they're brilliant on the road as well.
I don't think there's a team
in the country that's won more games than them away from home. They've won 10.
Yeah.
They're obviously way ahead of Portsmouth now. Good to see.
Not that far ahead.
No, they're fourth, aren't they? And Portsmouth are seventh.
Yeah.
Exeter City, mm-hmm. Portsmouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, do I know you any more?
What?
Portsmouth are a giant.
I thought you said that they're not much more ahead of Portsmouth.
No, they've jumped ahead of Portsmouth.
Yeah, they have, yeah. But Portsmouth you've still got promotion ambitions.
Well, Portsmouth lost to Wickham at the weekend and Wickham leapfrogged them as well.
Are you trying to let the hope not kill you? Happening here?
The problem is the best I can hope for in this situation is Portsmouth get beat in the semi-final of the playoffs. That's not the best that can happen. I'd rather just not bother. I'd rather forget about it.
Didn't last year they got beaten in the semis?
Yeah, by Plymouth, yeah.
Yeah.
Because basically I think it's because they had a lot of loan players and they all just went home.
Mm.
The loan deals, we weren't even clever enough to run the loan deals past the playoff. So
We've
got Plymouth for quite a good team. We haven't got any players.
Do you fancy another week? God, no. Get me out of here.
Hello, Chelsea. Yeah. Could you do us a favour?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've done what's contractually obliged from me. I'll be off now.
All right, well, let's move on to the Africa Cup of Nations. And the Lions are indomitable again.
Mm. They
beat Egypt 2-1. They went a goal down. And this is a fantastic story. If you haven't been keeping up with the Africa Cup of Nations, this Cameroon side, very unfancied. And I implore you to read anything that Jonathan Wilson's written on the Africa Cup of Nations, because that is a man who absolutely loves that tournament, goes out there, covers the whole thing, and covers it very well. But this Cameroon team were not given a hope. 8 players pulled out of the squad or refused to go. Mm. And their best players, you know, like Joel Matip, for example. Mm. Hugo Bruce came in, and has done a fantastic job against... what everyone thought that they would do.
Well, I think it's interesting to see the players that weren't selected for the Africa Cup of Nations, either through him not selecting or them not making themselves available. Mm. I mean, there's some good players in there.
Very good.
Said Joel Matip, Choupo-Moting, who scored goals in the Bundesliga for a while. Now, mm-hmm. Alex Song, mm-hmm. Stefan Mbia, obviously formerly of QPR, Sebastian Besson. These players weren't picked, or they weren't making themselves available. And so, Bruce, that article that Jonathan wrote more recently, very, very interesting about how he settled on a new era, essentially, and said, we've got these players, we're going to make a real team of them. And if you look at when he took the job over in February of last year, a lot of those big players, their last cap was like March, the month after he took over. So he's either said... no, we're moving on now,
yep.
Or those players have said we don't want to play, and that's fine, and he's had the last laugh, because when Joel Matip was losing 2-0 to Hull, Cameroon were lifting the Africa Cup of Nations.
Right. And Bruce said that it's a group of friends, that's why players on the bench keep their motivation. You know, they're all mates in that squad. They've got wonderful spirit, and we've seen that. And I did quite like what he said. He said, I took some new players, put some young players in, and we started working. I did a good job.
He did.
But didn't he just?
He looks can't
like,
deny it.
For those who can't picture him or haven't seen him, he looks like a slightly wizened detective in a European crime drama.
Yeah, okay.
That's what he looks like. But, there's a nice tribute to Mark Vivian Foe as well after the game. Obviously, he passed away in 2003. It was great to see Samuel Eto'o in the crowd as well, who won the Africa Cup of Nations for Cameroon in 2000 and 2002. Uh-huh. And the goal that Abubakar scored to win it was a beauty.
Oh, it was.
Worthy of winning the tournament.
Because what I loved about that, it was a really typical final goal, and it was very frantic. But it was very skillful at the same time, sort of skillful and scrappy at the same time.
Right, yeah, absolutely
because finals are very scrappy, you get that sometimes. It becomes all about the basics and doing it right and just getting your timing right. And it was just, I love it.
Yeah, because he sort of miscontrolled it slightly to begin with, but then did a...
Off his chest.
Yeah, but did a Letizia-esque loop,
if you will.
Flick over the defender. It was a glorious goal, although El Neni scored a nice one.
He did. And the great thing about El Neni's goal was that He almost mini fainted to cross, which meant the goalkeeper had his weight on the wrong foot and he just rifled it past him.
A bit like Gabby Deeney's. Southampton, which was a beauty.
A special note for the Egypt goalkeeper.
Oh, yeah.
Essam El Hadari. He's 44. He's got 154 caps for Egypt.
Beautiful.
He made his senior debut in 1993.
He broke the record for the longest running run in the Africa Cup of Nations.
Did he really?
I really like
what Jonathan Wilson said about him. He said, this is a great passage about El Hadari's antics and his experience, if you like. Yeah. So now, Egypt's perhaps weary, reverted to type. They sat deep, they scrapped and spoiled, and they sustained a predictably abnormal amount of injuries. El Hadari remains a master at this. It's remarkable that somebody with such a low pain threshold could have such a long career.
Yeah, I love that line. That was excellent. Yeah. But it's a shame for Egypt, of course. And they know how to win that tournament, my goodness. But wonderful for Cameroon in the circumstances
Absolutely.
As well. I mean, Egypt kept 4 clean sheets, I think, on the way to that final. So Cameroon done very well indeed. So marvellous stuff from Africa. Right, let's get to the highlights of the week with Luke Moore.
Yeah, I've got some highlights here. And first up, Joe Podsiadly, I think this is pronounced. He says, not so much a highlight as I support Palace, but definitely an issue that shouldn't be ignored. I was seated in front of the area reserved for disabled fans during the Sunderland game on Saturday, and I was disheartened by what I saw. Not only are disabled fans in the stand with restricted viewing due to pillars and a gantry, they're also so far back that the majority of fans in front spend the game standing and obstruct the view completely. I watched a wheelchair user of no older than 12 having the whole match described to him by a carer as he simply could not see the pitch. He still supported as rapidly as any fan watching their side go 4-0 down by half-time could, but in this day and age, with this much investment in the game, it should not be happening. Yeah. I just wanted to mention that because we talked a bit about it in positive light a few weeks ago. Hopefully Crystal Palace take a look at that.
Wasn't a highlight, he was highlighting.
Yeah, he was, and it was the most popular comment on our Facebook page, so I wanted to mention it, just for the listeners, if for no one else.
Yes.
James Balboni says, my highlight is Mel Clasico, the victory 1-2-1, including a Tim Cahill red card, despite him not setting foot on the pitch.
That's right.
He complained so much about the goal, apparently, that he was sent off before he could even come on.
He instantly took his boots off, which I thought he was just going to throw them at the ref.
The ref's not going to change his mind, Pete. He might as well.
Pete, change your boots.
You'd hate Tim Cahill.
Don't like Tim Cahill.
Yeah,
no.
So you're pleased about that?
Matthew Moore.
I've mellowed as I got older.
Matthew Moore says Bologna 1, Napoli 7.
Yeah.
My heart of the week. A red card apiece, a missed penalty, and 2 hat tricks. And David Harrison backs him up, says Marek Hamšík and Dries Mertens both scored hat tricks as Napoli clobbered Bologna 7-1 in their own back garden. Hamšík got a diving header. And Jordan Corbo, I increased my record to 4 from 4 Liverpool losses while I've been drunk during games. For the sake of the club, I need to stop drinking.
He does. He really does.
Stop this.
And one final one here, Ewan Rowe. Yakubu is on trial with Coventry and he's apparently 34 years old.
Yeah. Magic.
I'll leave that out there.
Wonderful. Yeah.
No further comments.
At least one of those things is correct.
It's the last thing Coventry need. For what's been going on down there.
A little mention on Serie A. Juan Cuadrado's half volley for
Beauty.
Juventus.
That stayed hit.
Glorious.
Lazio won 6-2 as well, didn't they?
They did. It was a big score. Very un-Italian-like, these big scores. What about the reports that Pablo Aimar might be coming out of retirement at the age of 37?
Who for? Estudiantes?
Estudiantes. Well, of course, it's the thing to do. Juan Perón.
Yeah. When in Rome.
He's 41. Yeah. So that's quite a good deal, a 37-year-old.
I loved Pablo Aimar back in the day.
He was great. One of Messi's... apparently Messi's now the top free kick scorer for Barcelona. He's overtaken Ronald Koeman's record.
Oh, right.
Saw that earlier, yeah.
Pablo Aimar was one of the very many new Maradonas, wasn't he?
He was, very much so.
But
it's a bit weird with footballers when they come out of retirement, because when it's like a band who get back together, sometimes that's not advisable, but sometimes you sort of think, that'd be nice to see a bit of the old magic. With footballers, it's not quite the same.
No.
Not
Scouty, Sean Ramiobi.
Is that it?
Yeah. Is it back in the black and white?
No way.
Yeah.
It's the closest you can hope for reliving the past.
Mm. With Kevin Nolan at the helm.
It's bad Amy Obi's career. I wouldn't want to relive the past, to be honest.
Any more, gentlemen.
I'll move that guy who emailed in.
Yeah. I wouldn't call this a highlight, but I think it's worth pointing it out. A Palace fan was arrested at half-time for confronting Damien Delaney. Have you seen Damien Delaney?
Mm. I wouldn't be... I mean, you know, I haven't seen Palace as much as some, but Delaney's not the worst culprit. He's a really tough, hard-working player.
Yeah,
he's just old.
My goodness. It's just really hard. That man deserves probably a ban and also a bravery award.
He'll definitely get one of those.
He will do, yeah. Right then, that's it. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, everybody. It's been a pleasure. Get your emails in, of course, show@thefootballramble.com to tell us if you're a professional footballer. Yeah. Only if you're a professional
or to
footballer.
To make up that you're a professional footballer.
That's all this show has become, really.
Yeah. Indeed it has. Yeah. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Bye.
Bye from me. And I've asked you many times.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Enough, you've had the end on the show. Okay.